Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Testaverde will take the snap, go to one knee. This game is over. The Jets lock up their first playoff appearance since 1991 on a 21-16 victory over the Miami Dolphins.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
To save his life, call his wife and
hey, 406. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. It is a good morning. It's game day for both the Mets and the Yankees. The Mets, who took care of business again last night, take down the Phillies 7-2, lead this series 2-1. They did it on the back of another great performance of Sean Manaea, who is nothing short of miraculous where he was last year. The purpose of his signing this year, which was ultimately to hopefully get a good first half and be able to sell him for something. And the transition he's made and his arm slot, and we heard the word crossfire a million times. You remember that commercial? Crossfire, crossfire. When they would, that game, I used to have the crossfire where you'd shoot the little metal pins at like a star in the middle and you'd try to get it to the other side. Remember crossfire? Anyway, heard that a million times in the broadcast. As he's changed that arm angle almost mid-season after watching Chris Sale, and he has just been on one hell of a tear. And this performance yesterday where he's just, I mean, he's breezing through until he gets to that big moment in the sixth that I think is the game changer. Obviously, you get the Alonso home run, and what he's been since that moment in Milwaukee has been a different player. Looking to go opposite field and hit another Oppo Taco, his third of this postseason already. You get the Winker home run as well, and they have a 2-0 lead. And typically, that's where the Mets have failed. The last thing the Mets want to do is jump out to a lead. They want to fall behind. That's when they have the team where they want them. That's where they have the Phils where they want them. But instead, in this game, the moment that where it could have fallen apart in the sixth inning, he walks the first two guys of the inning. He walks Schwarber. He walks Turner on kind of a non-competitive at bat. And then immediately locks in, strikes out Harper, gets the double play line out from Castellanos, and away the Mets went. More add-on, tack-on runs, which is the calling card of this team. Bases loaded, nobody out. They do make it interesting and get two outs without scoring a run, but then boom, Marte, who's had multiple big hits along the way here, comes through with a big hit, makes it a 4-2 game. They add two more to make it a 4-0 game, excuse me, eventually a 6-0 game, and a final of 7-2. And this team continues to just impress. Manaea goes 7+ after looking like he was dead after 6. They send him back out there. He has an easy 7-pitch seventh. I mean, 7+ innings, one run, and a big playoff game against your rival in the first time that this team has played in this building in 2 weeks. All right, that is just a big-time performance. And they are looking to take care of this series later today. The Yankees with a big game, with Clark Schmidt on the mound trying to take a lead in this series like the Mets did yesterday, trying to put a big swing game and try and quell off all the fears. And we're going to have to, it's a big game from Clark Schmidt. Clearly, they need a well-pitched game. They haven't gotten one yet. They need a big performance from Aaron Judge. They haven't gotten one yet. And they need a big victory on the road. Otherwise, we will be in panic mode later today. And then, of course, Robert Saleh out of nowhere is fired earlier today. The Jets and Woody Johnson make the decision that they have to move on from this head coach. All the reports, whether, and just, it's more of just the same from the Jets. Then you get all the nonsense. Was he escorted from the building? Was it because he had a flag on his arm? Was it, you know, then you get the reports later in the evening that it was because he had a meeting and decided to take play calling duties away from Hackett. And then what does that mean? Does that mean Hackett went to the quarterback and Aaron Rodgers is behind the firing, which we all know Aaron Rodgers has something to do with it. He's got something to do with every aspect of this team. But ultimately, it's hard to complain because Robert Saleh's been a terrible head coach. The team has continued to show lackluster starts, terrible first halves, too many penalties, a lot of the same nonsense that's gone on with whomever the quarterback is. And I tried to give Saleh the benefit of the doubt. I talked about, hey, what do you expect him to do with guys like Zach Wilson? He's had the worst quarterback room in the NFL. It's the most important position in all of sports, arguably, and you've given him nothing. Let's just see what he can be. And the first five games we saw. So while I don't know if it's the right move, I don't know if it changes anything, the two main takeaways for me is I can't totally disagree with it. I'm concerned about Rodgers' hold over this organization. I'm still concerned about the offense. I'm still concerned about Nathan Hackett being the offensive coordinator. I'm still concerned about everything. As they go to play Buffalo for a chance to be first place in the division, I don't know what this does. But I know he was a lousy head coach, and it's never a bad idea to get rid of a bad head coach. And we'll find out what Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator turned interim head coach, can do to change things. But it better happen quickly. And I do appreciate Woody Johnson's, you know, urgency. And I do appreciate the idea that he's wanting more from this season. We all do. And when you listen to some of the sound from the players, some of the comments in the post game, it felt like something needed to change. So the Jets make the change. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure who's behind it. I think we all have suspicions, but it doesn't matter. Ultimately, Monday night, they'll take on Buffalo in still an opportunity with a talented roster, a good defense, a Hall of Fame quarterback, an excellent running back tandem, or at least what should be, and possibly, who knows, in the next couple days, another stud wide receiver to go take on the Bills to possibly be in first place. So that's where we are on this morning. The Jets just continuing to prove, whether this turns out to be the right move or not, that they are as dysfunctional as any team in the city, any team in the NFL, any team in professional sports. That's what they showed us yet again. And we got to just hope that Woody Johnson for once made the right call, got rid of an inept head coach, and hopefully they can actually bring some enthusiasm, a spark, and light a fire under this team who's right there as one of the most talented teams in the NFL. And at 2-3, it's unacceptable. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls on all of those situations. Tyler in AIPAC. What's up, Tyler?
Hey, Big Mac. Thanks for taking the call.
You got it, buddy.
I wanted to ask about Rodon. You know, I know he was brought in with a big contract to pitch these meaningful innings in the playoffs, but he, at no point during the season did he give me confidence he should be getting postseason starts. And obviously, you know, this blow up in the first start of the postseason.
Well, wait, hold on. That I disagree with you. At no point this year he gave you confidence that you should give him postseason starts?
He had flashes, obviously. He had great games where
flashes.
He thought this guy could
no.
beat.
He had flashes of fears of postseason failures. He had overall a very good season. The flashes,
the
fears.
Could you argue that Luis Gil was our best pitcher throughout the entire course of the season? I mean, consistently,
I don't know.
You know.
No, I think you could argue him and Rodon were right there. And Rodon makes the big money. So
he does make the big money, but
you had to I think the Yankees were perfectly within their rights and perfectly it was more than fair to give him game 2. Now, the question about game 5.
I think it was fair to give him game 2. Do you think that game 5, do you think he's deserving to get that start game 5 if it comes down to it?
No, having said all that, no. I have no problem pitching him again in the ALCS if they make it that far, but I don't know if I can pitch him in a winner-take-all Game 5. I don't know if I can.
Yeah.
So
I think it's got to be Luis Gil at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you could do Luis Gil. You could start Rodon on a very short leash. He did pitch great for the first 3 innings. Maybe you could tell him, hey, whatever you need, you know, go peacock it and laugh and say, you know, come on, you know, let's go, boys, or whatever it is you do for 3 innings, and then we'll bring in Luis Gil. You could do something crazy as well. If the Yankees, and I was thinking about this, and I forgot to mention it, I came in and did a few minutes with Tiki and Evan, and Tiki suggested if they win game three, if they win tonight, would you start Luis Gil game four? With the thought of he's, like you just said, he was one of their best starting pitchers all year, up for Rookie of the Year. You could win that game. Why not? You could win that game against Michael Wacha, finish off the Royals in four, and have Cole ready for game one of the ALCS. Or if you lose that game, you have Cole in the winner-take-all game five as kind of the safety net. And my initial thought was to dismiss it. Either way, if they lose the game, clearly I need Cole to keep the series alive. If they win the game, I want to go for it right there, and I like my matchup of Cole and Wacha. And I want to win that game right there. I expect Cole, especially off of game one, to pitch much better, and I want to do it right there. But I have to admit, with the prospect of either going back to Rodon in game five or a Luis Gil who hasn't pitched since when, I don't like against Reagans for the Royals. If I ever lose game four with Cole, I'm in a miserable spot. I'm in a miserable spot. Other than being at Yankee Stadium, hopefully the offense can break through on Reagans, but I'm in a miserable spot. I like my chances with Luis Gil versus Wacha a hell of a lot better than I like Luis Gil or Rodon against Reagans. So I don't know. I still think my gut is keep him on regular rest. Cole is a creature of habit. I don't want to now pitch him off that long rest, which clearly affected him in game one, and then pitch him on 7 days rest in game five. It's not ideal. I probably just want to keep him on 5 days rest and throw him in game four anyway. But I dismissed it initially. I have to admit, it's crept back into my head after watching Rodon pitch and thinking, I don't know if I can trust him in a game five. Moving forward, I'll give him another start. I will. But against this Royals team, again, back-to-back, off of that performance in a game five winner-take-all, I have a real problem with it. I don't know if you can do it. But let's not worry about it, because they're going to win tonight. They're going to win tomorrow. We don't have to worry about this nonsense. Richard in Manhattan.
Hi, Chris. Two things I want to bring up. First, yes. It's a crap. You don't have dominant pitching anymore. Mm-hmm. The Mets have had, in the 19 postseason games that I've seen this year, the Mets have had the best starting pitcher. You don't have pitchers going 8-9 innings, dominant starting pitching. That's why it's a crapshoot. You really don't have that anymore. That's what he means by a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Now, the Mets.
Good.
The Mets have faced the game they're playing today, exact game 38 years ago. 1986, game six playoffs against Houston. They had to win that game. They were up 3-2. If they lost to Houston in game six, they had to face Mike Scott in game seven, who had beaten them twice already. Couldn't touch him. Well, they lose tonight. Then they got to go against Zach Wheeler. Now, yes, they won the last game he pitched. I have a feeling he's going to go 120 pitches. No. I think the Philly manager made a mistake last time and should have left him in for 120, even though he had a 111.
I don't know about that.
That guy was dominant.
Well, they'll push him. There's no doubt. Their season's on the line, and the Mets, and Richard, that's two things you said there, 100%. You want to win this game if you're the Mets. It's hard to say you can't beat Wheeler. They did already, and plus what the Mets have done here, you have to have confidence no matter the circumstance, no matter the situation. Philadelphia, in Philly, against Zach Wheeler, it's a tough matchup, and it's one I want to avoid, but it's not one I can't say the Mets can't win. They've done it. They've done everything. They've done everything. But you're right. It's an important game for the Mets today. You want to win this game and avoid that situation because Wheeler is one of the best pitchers in the league. You'll be throwing, you know, a combination of Senga and Peterson and McGill and whoever else. So, yeah, no doubt. I want to win it. First, you want to win at home, but you do not want that situation. As much as I would still have faith and confidence in the Mets to handle that situation because they've handled everything, you don't want to be in it. You want to win tonight. You don't want to worry about that nonsense. Having said that, if they get there, if, unfortunately, Quintana can't get the job done, the Bats don't pull off the miracle as they do every game, and they lose it, in Game 5, I do agree with the idea you are going to see a ton of Wheeler. I don't know about 120, 130, whatever crazy nonsense you want him to push him to. But here's the one benefit for the Mets. There is no one in this bullpen left to go to. The Mets have just, they've touched up this bullpen. There is not any sort of, how could you have confidence in going to any of these guys in the back end of the Philly bullpen? I mean, the last time Wheeler pitched, as soon as they took him out of the game, it was immediate. They had the lead without getting an out. They gave up the lead without getting an out. You can't go to Strom. You can't go to Hoffman. I mean, you can go to, you know, Estevez, I suppose. But, like, right now, even Estevez gave up a Lindor double and an RBI. Like, they have touched up everybody. There is the Mets' confidence against the Philadelphia bullpen right now is at an all-time high. And I know Philly got Diaz. I know they did. But I still don't have that same feel. That was one situation, one game, one pitcher. It feels like no matter who Philadelphia brings in out of that bullpen, he's getting hit. So that's the one benefit. In a game like that, it better be Zach Wheeler, because I don't care who's coming out of that Philadelphia bullpen. I don't trust them to get any outs, specifically against the top of this Met lineup. Eric in Ronkonkoma. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Seema. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good, good. I had an opportunity to go to the game yesterday, but something personal came up the last minute, so couldn't go, but I did get to watch it, you know. So, obviously it looked electric there, you know. I tell you, I mean, you really can't complain about anything that went on with that game. I mean, the phenomenal pitching. I mean, the defense, that play that Vientos made, you know, basically falling into foul territory. I don't know how he got that.
Yeah.
Guy.
No, I mean, everything. Vientos's play there, or the throw from Taylor at second base to get Alec Bohm. Like, they're playing winning baseball at a consistent level that I don't know if I've ever seen. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that seemed to go against them yesterday was the ball that bounced off against the backstop to get Alonso at the plate. And 9 out of 10 times,
right.
You probably scored that run. But, I mean, they were just – that was a great game all around.
Yeah, I mean, and again, capitalizing on mistakes. They have who was stealing the base? Bader. Bader's out. It's a perfect throw from Realmuto, and Turner drops the ball. Now, at that point, probably the game's already decided, but then, of course, you know what they're going to do. Philadelphia gives them the extra out. They don't make the play on the steal. And then Iglesias comes through with the base hit to add on another two runs and make it 6-0. Like, they take advantage of every mistake. They come through in every big clutch situation late in the game. They make every defensive play. Like, it's just crazy right now. They have been pitch perfect. Other than Diaz blowing the save and you know, the bullpen with in game two of the wild card. So they've had a couple of bullpen blow-ups. Besides that, they've done everything. You know, other than just winning every game 12-0, right? In game three of the wild card, they didn't score many runs. And we're kind of lifeless the first 6 or 7 innings, but it's just, when they need it, they get it. When the other team makes a mistake, they pounce. It's when the other team scores runs, they come right back and score runs of their own. It's a consistent level over the last week and a half that I don't ever remember seeing. Yeah, I mean, even with the Dynasty Yankees, they just, like, when they were going through their streak of winning all those playoff games and winning all those consecutive World Series games, like, there's a stretch maybe, but I mean, then they just started, like, 99, they just walked right through the Braves. 98, they walked right through. I mean, they hit the big home runs, don't get me wrong, Brocious and Tino Martinez, Grand Slam. But, like,
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is crazy.
Talk New York sports on the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 4:30. McBonagle here with you on the Fan. Let's get right back to the calls, 888-808-1019. Big day of baseball ahead of us. Mets game 4, Yankees game 3, Clark Schmidt on the mound. And again, I mentioned it, I think we all expected Luis Gil. And welcome to the Yankee Stove half hour. Why not? 4:30. Sounds about right. We haven't done much of them. Big game. Big game. Big game. As much as we all thought Luis Gil was going to start game 3, the more I think about it, and especially with the first two performances, I'm actually glad it's Clark Schmidt. Because I can't have another blow up. I can't have another just miserable start. And I really, like, the one thing about Clark Schmidt, he's going to give up some runs. Like, even against the Royals, he's going to give up 2-3 runs. Like, I know that. But he's going to go 6, maybe 7. Like, that's what he does. And this offense, that's got to be good enough to win this game. It just has to be. It has to be. And Luis Gil, as good as he can be, and yeah, if you told me, you know, one of the two is going to throw 7 shutout innings, who's it going to be? My guess would be Luis Gil. But if you told me one was going to get pulled out after 2 1/3 and gave up 4 runs, Luis Gil. Because he can lose the strike zone. I can't be walking Kansas City Royals right now. I just can't. We'll see if this backfires. It's against the grain. Luis Gil's been the more consistent, obviously, health-wise, with Clark Schmidt going down for a long period of time. He's been more consistent, and his stuff is clearly better. And he has more swing and miss stuff. But I trust Clark to just give a good start. And right now I'm just in desperate need of a good quality start. And this offense has got to make that good enough. 888-808-1019. Phil in Manhattan. What's up, Phil?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I can't help but compare the spectacular performance of Fernando Tatis and the success of Michael King, Yankee reject, and Carl Higashioka, another Yankee reject, with the paltry performances of the very overrated Aaron Judge and the very overrated Carlos Rodon, who are practically guaranteeing that the Yankees are going nowhere in this playoffs.
Okay. They're practically guaranteeing. All right. And Judge, and Judge is overrated.
Yes,
but
he is.
But Michael King, who pitched 5 innings and gave up 5 runs, he's clearly the star.
He won the game because they scored
more runs.
He pitched well enough to win the game.
Oh, yeah, I know.
He pitched well enough to win the game.
He gave up 5 runs in 5 innings, and you're lamenting lamenting the Juan Soto trade because of 5 innings and 5 runs? Oh, my God.
Yes, I am.
Well, you're nuts. You're nuts. You're absolutely nuts. And you call, I mean, you know, and first of all, how much underachieving has San Diego done? I know that's not this year, but, like, the amount of underachieving that team has done historically, like, please stop. And Judge is overrated. The guy literally had the greatest season a right-handed hitter has ever had. Stop it. He hasn't performed in the postseason. Again, and mostly recently. If you go back, he's had good playoff series. He had a great series against the Astros in 17. He had a very good series against the Boston Red Sox in 2018. He hit home runs in both wild card games against the Oakland A's and the Minnesota Twins. And if you think those games are meaningless, imagine if they lost them. We're pretty much talking about a miserable 22 playoffs and these first two games. He hasn't been good his last 70 at-bats. Do you want me to give you some of the at-bats? How about this one? Ready? Let's see what player this is. The first 97 at-bats for this player. He went 19 for 97, which is under 200. 19 for 77. One home run and six RBIs. His first 97 plate appearances in the postseason. One home run, six RBIs, under 200 with 19 for 97. That'd be Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds overrated. You want to go through Willie Mays' postseason? How about the World Series when Ted Williams got there? I'm not saying it's okay. He's got to be better or they'll lose. And when they lose, or if they lose because he did nothing, I'll kill him along with you. Overrated is just an unfair, silly comment in the short sample size of a postseason. It just is. I'm sorry. He's not, and you know, he's not, if Pete Alonso strikes out in that at-bat instead of hitting a three-run home run, he's not Pete Alonso. He's the best hitter in the league. He's not some guy who's like pretty good and ultimately fails. He's the best. He's carried them here multiple times. He's the reason they were in the ALCS in 2022. He's the reason they were in the playoffs. He carried them there. And finally, he was so exhausted, he didn't do anything in the postseason. But he gets no credit for literally dragging the team to 99 wins. Stop. Nick in Tennessee. What's up, Nick? Overrated. God.
Well, speaking of overrated,
yeah.
How about Brian Cashman being the most overrated general manager in the history of baseball? I think the Yankees roster is Cashman's fault. I've said for years he walked into what Stick Michael built. The Yankees have won one pennant in 20 years, going back to 04. Mm-hmm. One pennant in 20 years,
yes.
Despite the payroll.
Mm-hmm.
It has to go back to how the teams are constructed. You look at this roster right now. It's not athletic. Giancarlo Stanton shouldn't even be on the roster.
Yeah,
well, he's done. His legs are done.
I get that. But, I mean, you didn't. I mean, he played right field every day and won an MVP when they traded for him. There was no way to expect him to get to a point where he can't run in a couple years. I'm not trying. I mean, it is what it is. I hear you. But, listen, it's not good enough. But, again, he's put, like, again, right now. What do you think of the Dodgers roster and how much money they put into it? Because they're one game away from being eliminated yet again. And they have won World Series since 1988. And how much money have they spent? Like, it's not just
well,
you spend
just
money and you guarantee to win championships.
I agree, but I don't understand why Cashman gets a pass. The media doesn't take this guy to pass.
They do. What are you talking about? He was yelling at the media at the start of the year. Like, they take him to task recently. Look, and again, I understand he was given the core four. He was the GM of 98, 99, 2000. He won three championships. He's won four total championships. He hasn't won a pennant since 2009. I agree, not good enough. And before that was 2000. I'm not trying to defend the last handful of years. And particularly the last three before this one, he's done a bad job. He built a team right now that had the best record in the American League and are far better than the competition they put forth. And we see right now that they're losing because Judge hasn't hit and they haven't done enough offensively. This is an offense that led the league in runs scored. Like, I'm not trying to say he has no blame in it, but if you put together a team that finished with the best record in the American League, scored the most runs, and has a superstar that had the best offensive season of any right-handed hitter in the history of baseball, and he comes up short and does nothing, and they don't score enough runs, like, How do you build the perfect postseason team? Because we haven't seen a repeat champion since those 2000 New York Yankees. So, like, how do you do it?
Well, because it's difficult. But you look at Cashman's trade deadline.
Yes.
Look at his past couple of trade deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go out, you get Mark Leiter, and he's done nothing.
The guy
they get from the Padres, they end up DFAing him.
Yep. He did terrible in the bullpen. Totally true. But how do you feel about the bullpen right now? How do you feel about Weaver off the scrap heap being as good a closer as we've seen in the postseason? How do you feel about Cousins, who I didn't even know existed or was a cousin of Kirk Cousins before he came up and was dominant in the second half? How do you feel about trading a prospect that nobody even remembers and isn't good enough to play for the Pittsburgh Pirates for Clay Holmes, who's been, you know, at times a troublesome guy, but just broke the record for most consecutive innings of scoreless baseball in Yankee history to start his playoff career? How do you feel about all the guys at the back end of the bullpen they got off the scrap heap? Like, yeah, I understand.
Well, I trust Weaver. I trust Weaver. Mm-hmm. I trust Cousins.
Okay.
I don't trust Holmes. Every time he comes in, man, I'm chewing my nails off.
I understand that. But again, the most consecutive scoreless runs. We talk about playoffs. Aaron Judge just got called overrated from the last caller because of his playoff performance. Overrated. But when it comes to Clay Holmes, and I give you postseason numbers and tell you no other Yankee in history has pitched this many scoreless innings to start their Yankee playoff career, you're going to tell me, well, in the regular season, he was terrible. See what I'm saying? We pick and we choose. Brian Cashman had a terrible trade deadline for the relief pitching. They needed, at the time of the deadline, they were in desperate straits. And he traded for two guys who one's not good enough to make the playoff roster and the other one they DFA'd. Disgustingly bad. Disgustingly bad. They also added Jazz Chisholm, who might be the best offensive pickup at the trade deadline. And he hit a home run, and despite his comments after the postgame, he had good at-bats, and he's brought a lot of energy to this team and kind of turned the team around. That was a good trade. But when you talk about the bullpen, they have a closer who everybody could have had. Everybody. Anybody could have had Weaver. Cousins, I didn't know existed. Right? How about Wandy Peralta for Mike Tauchman? Like, I'm just saying. Like, there's been some good ones mixed in. And they win a hell of a lot of games. They haven't won the championship. Right? And sometimes they fall short of going all in. No one disagrees. And prior to this year, He did a miserable job from 20 to 23. Miserable. Every move he made almost exclusively was the wrong one. Can't disagree. I think when he finally traded pieces away in 16, from 16 to 19, I thought he was brilliant. 19, the entire team fell apart, and he found little move after little move to have them win 100-plus games and be in the ALCS. I think from 16 to 19, brilliant. From 20 to 23, disgustingly bad. And then this year he got Juan Soto, and he built the best team in the American League with a chance to go to the World Series. And if your best players don't perform, you don't win. Because we could all talk about the job that the Texas Rangers did building that team. But if Corey Seager didn't hit, they wouldn't be World Series champions. He went off, they won. That's how it works. Philadelphia, what a great team they've built. 2 years ago, went to the World Series. Everyone's hitting. They spare no expense. Castellanos, obviously Harper. They went out and get Trey Turner. They got, the entire team is full of Schwarber. They're about to lose to the Mets, who entered the season with zero expectations. The Dodgers built the freaking super team. They went out and gave a $700 million contract to Ohtani. They got Mookie Betts. They got Freddie Freeman. They got Ohtani. They got Yamamoto. They traded for, what's his name at the trade deadline? The pitcher from Detroit, whose name is escaping me because it's 4:44 in the morning. They got the super team. They're about to get eliminated by the San Diego Padres. It's not easy. 888-808-1019. We'll come back. Take your phone calls all the way till 5 o'clock. We'll come back rapid fire style. But all of what I just said doesn't change the fact that they need to friggin' win. Or it's a disaster. And it goes back onto Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone and the players. They got to win this series. They absolutely have to get back to the World Series, or it's a failure in every way, shape, and form. But why does he get a pass from me on some level? Because he wins all the freaking time. And it's not that easy to do. And ask other executives around baseball what they think about Brian Cashman.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on. There it goes. Deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right. Another 10 minutes. We can see the light at the end of this five-hour ride tunnel. Warm-up show will come your way next. I'll catch you guys 2 a.m. We'll have a reaction to both baseball games. It should be fun. Nothing better than playoff baseball. Nothing better than the tournament. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Paul in Buffalo. What's up, Paul?
Chris, there is something better than playoff baseball. The 162-game regular season, mm-hmm. which baseball has done its best over the last 30 years to destroy.
Yeah.
The genesis of the stupidity of someone saying Aaron Judge is overrated
yes.
is the fact that we now play 3- and 5-game series Correct. After 162 games.
Correct.
If baseball wants to fix this problem, they can. Mm-hmm. You drop to 140-game regular season and you make every playoff series seven games long. Because I realize the motivating factor is always going to be money. It's always going to be money above baseball.
Right.
So at least make the playoffs difficult. 7-game series and lower the amount of regular season
well,
games.
They make the playoffs very difficult. I forget the playoffs. It's more of a crapshoot. I forget which broadcaster was talking about it, but it people feel like it's designed to hurt the best teams. Like that,
I believe it absolutely is.
Yeah, it's designed to help the lesser teams in these short series. Yes.
I mean, there is a reason when the greatest game, baseball, was invented and it came to its formation, the main peak, it came to a long regular season and only 4 teams in both leagues total mm-hmm. making the postseason.
Yeah.
It is about the regular season grind, and that is why Aaron Judge is the best, because on any year, he can hit you 55 to 60 home runs.
Yeah.
And he does that over the long haul.
Yeah,
anyone to insult him because in a 5-game series, he might not hit. I mean, it sucks. And it sucked for Barry Bonds, and it sucked for A-Rod. And any guy, you know, Ted Williams,
yep.
some of the greatest players, at least in Williams' time, it was different, though. Williams had to carry the Red Sox to the pennant first.
Right. And nobody would get on him. He was still...
That's right.
He was still the hero of Boston. Nobody would dare say, oh, no, well, he really screwed us in that World Series.
Because a pennant meant something.
Right.
Now, I mean, when you win a division, is that a pennant?
Yeah. No, just the season meant something. The season doesn't mean anything anymore. Apparently, no one cares. No one cares. No one cares what Judge did. It's only what he does now. That's how it works. It's a gift and a curse. It's a curse for the guys like Judge who have this historic season but have to continue it. And it's a gift for guys like Gleyber Torres who are miserable all year but have an opportunity within a couple games to make that all go away. That's how it works. It's a gift and a curse. But, Judge overrated. Listen, you want to say he's disappointing in the postseason. You say he's got to come through, otherwise he'll never be beloved. Like other Yankee fans, that's totally fair. You don't win a championship, you don't come through. We're not going to idolize the regular seasons and talk about you like Ted Williams. It's not. I'm not going to talk about you like Boston talks about Ted Williams. Probably won't even, in the new generation, probably won't even talk about you like Don Mattingly. Maybe Don Mattingly. I don't know. But you're not going to be Jeter. It's not. You're not. You will not be beloved if you don't win. He's got to win. I would never say anything different, but overrated? I mean, you're watching the greatest right-handed hitter possibly of all time. I'm going to call him overrated because he's you know, he's been on base three times in two games. It's absolutely crazy. The other night I had callers who wanted to bench him. I had a caller who wanted to move him down in the lineup. Can you imagine? Can you imagine wanting to move Aaron Judge out of the top of the order? If Aaron Boone panicked to that level and moved, what message would that send to the team? I think some people think it would send a message of if he could move Judge or bench Judge, or he could do it to anybody. I don't think it would send that message. I think it would send, my God, we're in trouble. He's got to move Judge. And also, he's a moron. That's the message he would send. Our manager's an idiot. Brett in Long Island, let's talk about the Yankees. What's up, Brett?
Chris, he is overrated. If he never does anything again, mm-hmm. he's the guy that built all the fans up, right, with these historic records. We talk about it all year long, mm-hmm. and he disappears in the playoffs. And, you know, he'll be known as the guy that never got to a World Series. That's it. Like, Bernie Williams, these guys got five championships. He hit 22 home runs in the postseason. Like, it's not even close.
Yeah, but he only...
Pete Alonso. But hold on. Let me make my point about the postseason. Stop with the regular season.
I'll give you
two examples quick. No. I didn't say... Did I say it doesn't matter? We're talking about overall. You're saying he's Babe Ruth. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the silliest comment. Just saying he's overrated is closer than you guys saying he's Babe Ruth and everything. Okay. So my point is Pete Alonso... It has been the talk of all year. He's going. You know what? If they make the run and finish the whole thing, they're going to remember him forever, the Mets. Yeah. They're going to build the statue. And I'm telling
you.
Who would you rather have on your team? But who can you really care about the regular season that much?
I didn't ask you. Brett, conversation. I did let you make your point.
You only got a few minutes. Fully.
Well, you know what, Brett? It's not your freaking show, and I don't have to let you make your entire point. We have a conversation. I only have a couple of minutes. You don't get to come on and just talk forever long you want, and I got to sit here and be quiet because you haven't made your point. Your point is, you got to do it in the postseason. He'll be beloved forever. And a lot, if they win the World Series, that home run will be beloved forever. You're 100% right. Who would you rather have on your team next year? Taking all into consideration. Say Judge doesn't get another hit. They lose to Kansas City. Pete Alonso goes on to hit home runs throughout the postseason. They win the World Series. Who you want on your team next year? And if you say Pete Alonso, you're an idiot. That's just it. Steve Pierce was Babe Ruth for a whole season, for a whole postseason. Steve Pierce with the Boston Red Sox in 2018 went on a freaking tear like we've never seen. The guy was unbelievable. He was a nobody. He played for every team in the stinking division. The Yankees had him. He was awful. He goes to Boston, and I don't know whether he was his Apple Watch or whatever the case might have been. The guy went freaking off. He won the World Series MVP. He killed the Yankees in the DS. He had an unbelievable postseason. And then after the year, he signed a one-year, $6 million deal. And he was out of baseball the next year. Now, why would someone who did that in the postseason sign a $6 million deal? Because it's a short sample size. And while your point about beloved is completely accurate, your point about overrated is stupid. Brian in North Carolina. What's up, Brian?
How's it going, man?
What's up?
I just lose brain cells every time I listen to some of these callers.
Yep.
But I just wanted
to say, how do you think I feel?
Oh, I can imagine. It's the same thing year after year with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
George is not, Hal is not like his dad. Oh. I'm sure he's rolling over in his grave.
Oh, Brian. Brian, I thought we were like in this together. I thought we were in it together, Brian. You call me up, you tell me.
That was so amazing because I knew exactly where it was going.
You can't listen to these callers anymore. You lose brain cells. I'm with you. And then you give me the "If George Were Alive." I can't. That music never hit at a better time in the year and what a year and a half I've been doing this. That was perfect. Hal's not his father like that has anything to do with what's going to happen today. Let's go, please, Yankees. Just end this, not please. If for any other reason, for my own sanity, win the freaking game, win the damn World Series so you don't have to talk this freaking nonsense. And Judge, do something. Sacrifice fly. Runner, move a runner over. Do something, please. I'll talk to you guys at 2 a.m. I'm out of here. Bye-bye. Warm-up show is next.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN, New York.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.